Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, back from the Thanksgiving holiday. To everyone in the US, I hope you guys had a wonderful, safe, happy Thanksgiving. To any international listeners we've managed to attract so far, well, it was probably just another week, just one without us. But don't worry, we're back on our regular every 2 week schedule at this time. So today, we're going to try something new, a short video on a particular mechanic, and with Commander Legends just having released, we're going to visit a mechanic that I really love, and one that should be super interesting, and that is the Monarch. So the Monarch is a really simple idea. If as long as you are the Monarch, at the beginning of your end step, you draw a card, and the Monarch gets traded around based on combat damage that gets dealt around the table. So how does it work? Essentially, whenever you cast a spell or a creature enters the battlefield with a text, you become the Monarch. You take that crown and you put it in your command zone. If a creature you control deals combat damage to an opponent who is the Monarch, you take the Monarchy. You become the Monarch. You can also steal the Monarch from another player by having a creature enter the battlefield with that you become the Monarch text. If you resolve that spell, you become the Monarch, your opponent loses it. And, importantly, at the end of your turn, if you're the Monarch, go ahead and draw a card. So let's get into the nitty-gritty. What does the Monarch actually do, apart from drawing that card? And how do these different Monarch cards play with that? At the baseline, it is a card that lets you become the Monarch. There was a lot of draft chaff commons printed in particularly Conspiracy 2, Take the Crown, where this was first introduced, such as Palace Sentinels. 3 and a white for a creature, human soldier. It's a 2/4. When it enters the battlefield, you become the Monarch. Kind of humdrum, but ideally, you want these cards to not just make you into the Monarch, but also allow you to become the Monarch again if and when you were to lose the Monarch, such as a big flying evasive creature like Skyline Despot. A 5 and 2 red for a 5/5 creature dragon with flying that makes you the Monarch when it enters the battlefield. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if you're the Monarch, put a 5/5 dragon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Now the next step is to go beyond this and not just make you the Monarch or take the Monarch, but be able to help you protect the Monarch. Thorn of the Black Rose, again from the original Conspiracy 2 set, is a one of probably the best of those draft chaff commons I mentioned because she is 3 and a black for a 1/3 creature human assassin with death touch that makes you the Monarch when it enters the battlefield. There's a few other types of cards that act as these fortress and hold back enemy attacks by threatening to penalize them for attacking the Monarch or taking the Monarchy from you. They're probably not quite as good, but they were an interesting design space. Now next is something, a card that does something while you are the Monarch. The disadvantage being for these payoffs is you lose the payoff if you lose that crown. So Keeper of the Keys, for example, is 3 and 2 blue for a creature, human, rogue, mutant, a 4/4. When it enters the battlefield, you're probably getting tired of me saying, you become the Monarch. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if you're the Monarch, creatures you control can't be blocked this turn. A little bit more interesting is a card like Palace Jailer. 2 and 2 white for a creature that's 2/2 human soldier. When it enters the battlefield, again, you become the Monarch. And when Palace Jailer enters the battlefield, exile target creature an opponent controls until an opponent becomes the Monarch, potentially making your opponents want you to hold on to that Monarchy to keep that big scary something-something in exile for them. Last, but certainly not least, and potentially the most interesting, is the design space they had with cards that do something when you become the Monarch. Custode Lich from Conspiracy 2 Take the Crown was 3 and 2 black for a 4/2 creature zombie cleric. Again, enters the battlefield, become the Monarch. And whenever you become the Monarch, target player sacrifices creature. So a potentially reusable Grave Pact type effect. So we've looked at a few different examples of ways to become the Monarch and cards that play with the Monarch mechanic. How does it break down by color? There's a total of 31 cards in Commander which allow you to introduce the Monarch into the game. There are 5 in white, 5 in blue, 5 in black, 5 in red, 4 in green, 1 in Orzhov, and then there's a few commanders. We have in Mardu, Queen Marquesa, who introduces the Monarch, and now Naya has a new one, which we're going to get to later. There's also two colorless cards, an artifact creature and a land, and we'll talk about those in a little bit more detail in the future. So it's fairly evenly spread, even if there are quite a few draft chaff level commons and uncommons that probably are not going to make their way into too many commander decks. So, what's good about the Monarch? First and foremost, the Monarch is just a cool idea. As long as you're the Monarch, you get to be drawing that extra card every turn, and that can really help out decks, particularly those who have a low number of colors, and particularly if those low number of colors don't include a lot of green or blue or black cards that let you draw additional cards more easily. And the fact that it's the end of turn to draw a card is actually really nice. This gives you some options to make sure that if you resolve the Monarch, you're going to get at least one draw off of it. It also encourages combat, and particularly in casual games, you can really see this start to bog down as the board gets too full and no one's really willing to make the first move for fear of crackback. By putting that prize out there for the first person to attack, this can be a really good way to get games moving again. And all colors have access to cards which introduce the Monarch to the table. So really, in theory, any deck can play with this mechanic. On the other hand, though, there's some definite weaknesses with the Monarch, and one of the big ones I'm going to talk about here. The average converted mana cost is ridiculously high for Monarch cards. The average CMC of cards which introduce the Monarch into the game is 4.72. And while I acknowledge there are a lot of draft chaff commons in the piles of cards that can introduce the Monarch, I mean, who really wants to add a 5-mana 4/4 that cantrips into their deck? Even once you remove those basically unplayable cards, you're still looking at an average CMC of 4.68. Essentially, you're looking at potentially paying a lot of mana to draw a card, so you'd better make sure that when you cast a spell to become the Monarch, the front half, the actual spell itself, is doing something you want it to be do, and then just look at the Monarch as more of a cantrip level of value. So in the past on the podcast, we've talked about different styles of deck strategies, whether your deck is focused or it's a value-type deck. Focus-type decks are the ones that are prioritizing threats over answers, optimizing for the short game. A focus deck is looking to close the game out before a value deck can take over the game, whereas a value deck prioritizes resource advantage over speed, optimizing for the long game. Value decks seek to disrupt more focused opponents while creating and exploiting a resource imbalance to win. So it should come as no surprise that the value decks want to hold on to the Monarch and grind out the value from it, whereas focus decks are probably going to be a little bit more parasitic and are looking to just steal the Monarch from somebody else. They're less likely to be the ones to introduce it into the game. In the past, we've also talked about our Commander Quadrant theory, and where does the Monarch really land? Well, not surprising, based on the average CMC of cards that we've seen with the Monarch, it tends to be the most powerful in the casual quadrant, where you're going to see the highest CMCs in general as less efficient cards are being looked at. You can still play a lot of these effects in the more mid-power, so the balance, the linear, the chaotic deck styles. They have a fair amount of card draw, and introducing it into decks that are starved for it, particularly low-color decks, mono-white, mono-red, Boros, can be a nice investment and an additional benefit to help catch back up. When those low-color decks are now drawing two cards a turn instead of one, that is potentially huge for those types of decks, doubling their card income. On the other hand, in the optimized quadrant, you've really generally got better things to do with your 4 or 5 mana plays than trying to cantrip. You really want to look closely before you're introducing the Monarch into those types of games. So, I mentioned that we have a new set that has played with the Monarch again in Commander Legends. Commander Legends, in fact, adds 15 of the total 31 cards to the Commander card pool. We have quite a few new cards that play with making and taking the Monarchy. In white, we get Archon of Coronation, 4 and 2 white for a 5/5 creature. Archon with flying. When Archon of Coronation enters the battlefield, you become the Monarch. As long as you're the monarch, damage doesn't cause you to lose life. So this is a big evasive attacker and blocker. It can swoop back in and take the monarch, and it pads your life total for those times when you do lose the monarch. Court of Grace, also in white, is 2/2 white for an enchantment. It ETBs, you become the monarch. At the beginning of your upkeep, create a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying. And if you're the monarch, you instead create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. Gives you evasive attackers and blockers to regain the monarchy should you lose it. Commander Legends also added some cards that make it very easy to just in general protect the monarchy. I just mentioned the Court of Grace, but you also see cards like Fall from Favor, an enchantment aura for 2 and a blue, which enchants a creature. When it enters the battlefield, tap enchanted creature and you become the monarch. Enchanted creature doesn't untap during its controller's untap step unless that player is the monarch. A very nice way to tap down the one threatening creature that could take the monarch from you. Feast of Succession is the first time we've seen it not on a permanent. Feast of Succession is 4/2 black for a sorcery. All creatures get -4/-4 until end of turn, and you become the monarch. Emberwild Captain is a card that Stormseekers people. So for 3 and a red, this is a 4/2 creature djinn pirate. When it enters the battlefield, you become the monarch, and whenever an opponent attacks you while you're the monarch, Emberwild Captain deals damage to that player equal to the number of cards in their hand. That, boys and girls, is called Stormseeker. And punishing people for wanting to have a lot of cards in their hand, well, people are going to have a lot of cards in their hand in this format, we call Commander. Finally, there's also cards like Dawnglade Regent from the new set. 5/2 green for an 8/8 creature elk. When it enters the battlefield, become the monarch. And as long as you're the monarch, permanents you control have hexproof. There's also some cards that just do something cool while you're the monarch. The courts that I've already mentioned pay you off big time if you're the monarch, but as I'll mention, they also do a nice job of paying you just for keeping the enchantment around. The green court in this cycle is Court of Bounty. 2 green for an enchantment, ETB, you become the monarch. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. If you're the monarch, however, instead, you may put a creature or land card from your hand onto the battlefield. Cheating of mana costs and mana ramp? Court of Bounty seems very nice. We also got a unique effect in the new Naya Commander, who I promised I would talk about, and that is Jared Karthalion, True Heir. A red, a green, and a white, so Naya colors for a 3/3 legendary creature, human warrior. When Jared enters the battlefield, target opponent becomes the monarch. You can't become the monarch this turn. If damage would be dealt to this creature while you're the monarch, prevent that damage and put that many +1/+1 counters on it. That is cool. Number one, this is potentially that Naya Earthquake Tribal Commander that I've always kind of secretly wanted. Number two, it forces someone else to sit on the throne temporarily, so yeah, that's really cool. This is an aggressive type of deck that could seems like it could fairly easily take advantage of this and take the monarch for itself. That's really cool. The payoff is really cool, and it potentially opens some unique build paths. Now, as far as payoffs for becoming the monarch, unfortunately, Commander Legends did not really play around in this space. This is space I hope they do get to play around with more in the future, because I would like to see more effects like Custodi Lich to explore this area. So we've talked about all the sweet new cards from Commander Legends that add the Monarch to the game. How do you go about adding these cards to your deck? First and foremost, you really want to make sure that the front half of the card is an effect your deck actually wants. So my God Eternal Oketra deck, which wants to play lots of creatures in order to make lots of giant zombies, is pretty happy to get a removal spell in Palace Jailer that is stapled onto a body and just so happens to cantrip with the Monarch effect. Torbrand, Thane of Redfell, is my little bit more aggro bent of a deck, but it is pretty happy to see a card like Emberwild Captain, which, as I mentioned before, Stormseekers people who dare to attack you. Torbrand is pretty happy to attack 2 damage onto that if anyone dares to try to take the Monarch from you. On the other hand, my decks like Galta, Primal Hunger, my Brostorm deck, isn't really that eager to spend 6 mana to only double mana production from my lands and not my creatures. So less likely to want to run that one. And my Rakdos Lord of Riots deck, well, it wants damage being dealt on my turn, not my opponent's turns. So while I love Emberwild Captain for Torbrand, I'm a lot less high on it for a deck like Rakdos. It's also kind of helpful to know when your deck is ready for the Monarch. Having reliable access to an evasive threat, particularly an evasive commander who is in a more limited color identity, those tend to be decks that really look for it. So you're looking for effects like flying. You're looking for effects like menace. Token swarm type decks can also be really effective with it. If you're looking at a partner, consider partnering with Falthus, Shadow Cat Familiar. 2 and a black for a 2/2, legendary creature Nightmare Cat with partner. Commanders you control have menace and death touch. That is a very evasive combination and could potentially get in to retake the monarchy fairly easily. On the other hand, pillow forts often seem like a good way to hold onto the monarch. Cards like Propaganda, Baird, Steward of Argive, and Norn's Annex, these seem like great ways to protect your crown. However, you are still just one removal spell away from having a really bad time with an effect like Austere Command, just wiping out all of your stuff and ruining your day and leaving you wide open to lose everything, including your crown. Next, it's important that you watch your curve. You don't want to go taking out highly efficient cards and replacing them with cards that cost 3, 4, 7 more mana. You really want to try to keep that curve lean if you can help it at all. But certainly look for more comparable changes in your converted mana cost. Going from Dragonmaster Outcast at 1 mana to Skyline Despot at 7, that's not going to do many favors to your curve. And this is actually why I really like the cycle of Courts. They are very comparable to effects in their color identity that do a great job already, and these, for a little bit extra mana, or even a comparable amount of mana, are going to tack on adding the Monarch to the game. For example, in black, Bottomless Pit forces the player to start their upkeep by discarding a card at random. Court of Ambition still makes all of your opponents discard on your turn, spares you the discard, and introduces the Monarch to the table, all for 1 extra mana over Bottomless Pit. At the same time, in green, I already mentioned just how good Court of Bounty is, but let's now compare it to Wayward Swordtooth. 2 and a green for a 5/5 creature dinosaur, which can't attack or block unless you have the City's Blessing, and it allows you to play an extra land on each of your turns. For 1 extra mana, Court of Bounty lets you do this even if you're not the Monarch. But if you are the Monarch, the payoff is even bigger, letting you play creatures for free and cheap mana cost. So that's the state of Monarch here at the beginning of December in 2020. It's a really cool mechanic, though not without its flaws. And I love while it's in the game, but I don't always want to be the one to pay 4 to 5 mana to bring it into every single game. Not all of my decks are looking to do that. It has a place in a few, but not all of my decks. So where are you when it comes to using the Monarch? Are any of your decks going to be chasing the crown? Are you going to be putting the Monarch into any of your decks? Let us know on Twitter, shoot us an email, or leave a comment here on YouTube. Next week, the full crew will be back. We got a great episode planned for you. So until then, I'm John. This is Gemstone Mine. Take care. You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.